Welcome to Heartland Darkland. I'm Shannon.
And I'm Cassie. Hey, Deckhearts.
Hey, guys. Welcome.
Yeah, dude, I don't even know. Do we ever, though? I feel like we start every episode with, like, I have no idea. I don't know what's going on.
I was listening to ours last week, and I was like, yeah, I'm sure people really didn't care to hear every detail about our lives for the past week. And, you know, it's like, that's just what we do, though, because it's, like, hard. You don't want to just jump right into some gory, terrible story necessarily. No. But, you know.
Exactly. I mean,
I don't even have anything really too exciting. Things are fine here. We're just cruising through and
right, keep trucking along. Listen, with the intro, it's like we've said before, like, plenty of people can, like, skip ahead if they don't like that part.
Yeah.
When I listen to podcasts, I personally like it because I feel like I'm getting to know the people a little bit. Then it feels like listening to friends talk. So I enjoy that. So for those who maybe don't like that part, they can just skip ahead a little bit. You know, it's fine.
It is fine.
It's all good.
Yeah, that's and, it.
You know, there it is. If we're not your cup of tea, we're not your cup of tea. That's fine too. Just, you know,
then don't be jerks. If we're not your cup of tea, you're probably not listening anyways. So it's
right.
It is just fine and dandy and well.
I was walking back from dropping the kids off at the bus stop yesterday morning, and my friend came up behind me honking. She scared me, but she was like, oh, hey, I'm listening to you right now, because she was listening to the Starkweather case. She's like, yeah, I just got through the intro part with you guys chatting, so now we're getting into the meat of it.
A half hour later, so you're a half hour in.
I mean, listen, it's usually only, like, the first 10 minutes.
It was funny that last week it seemed like it had been longer, and I think it's because we had a longer episode, too, so I was like, gosh, we're chatty. We're a chatty bunch, you know?
But yeah, it was definitely a longer episode, but there was just so much information, like I said last week. Like, I didn't feel like I could really cut anything out. Yeah.
No. And some of them are shorter. Like, today mine is fairly short just because of lack of information. So, you know, it all evens out in the end. And I personally sometimes enjoy a longer one. So, or a part two even.
Yeah.
That story, though, last week was wild. Oh, I have been meaning to tell you this forever now, Cassie. Okay, so anyone who listened to the episode last week, Charles Starkweather, Nebraska killer. So lots of stuff I didn't know about that case, you know, that you shared, that I was like, that's crazy. So I was talking to my mom about it, and I was like, you need to listen to this case because there's all these things I didn't know, this and that. She said, yeah, did you know, or she goes, I don't even know how she got it. It got brought up, but she said something about him being in gearing. And that's where I'm from, hometown. And I was like, well, yeah, kind of. She's like, no. She said, Carol, right? Is that her name? Carol Fugate?
Yeah, Carol.
Okay, I don't know why all of a sudden I just had, like, a brain fart. spent a night in jail there. And I did not know that. Yeah, and I meant to tell you that because my mom's like, yeah. She goes, it was a huge thing because we were like, I mean, it was just, like, on their way back or whatever. I don't know. But she spent a night in jail there. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I need to tell Cassie. And I completely forgot until this moment right now. But there's a lot of crazy stuff about that case. Like, I didn't know that either. So
I didn't know that. That didn't come up in any of my research. So that's
I think it was probably just, like, a quick – I mean, like, no crime happened there. So I don't know if it was just in the midst of, like, transporting. Like,
I bet
you know what I mean?
In the midst of transporting. Because what did we say? She was in Wyoming? Mm-hmm.
Somewhere in Wyoming.
Yeah. Isn't Gearing not close
far.
To there?
Yeah. Like, depending on the part of Wyoming, it's not far. Yeah.
So I bet, like, an overnight stay type thing.
I was like, that's wild. I had no idea. So there's my, not claim to fame.
Connection.
I was about
to say claim to fame, but
that was just the phrase. It's not.
Your connection, what is it? The 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon, or whatever the hell it's called, the 5 degrees of separation or whatever.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah. But so anyways, if you haven't listened to that episode, you should, because especially if you're a Nebraska native here, you know, because that was a crazy one.
Lots of stuff I was not aware of.
So that was a good one. I enjoyed that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mine this week is not nearly as long. I mean, we're in Minnesota this week. I don't know if you're ready to just go into it.
Yeah, let's
it
go
or not.
For it. Let's dive into it.
I guess we can chat more after. I don't know.
Yeah.
this case is from the year just 2000. So old enough that you can't find still a lot because
it was Y2K. Everyone thought the internet was going to shut down and the world was going to end.
Oh yeah. And pagers were still a thing because that was mentioned at one point in this. But yeah, like I said, not a ton of information, but we're going to be in, we discussed this prior to recording. If it's Lino Lakes or Lino Lakes, Minnesota, you choose.
Lando Lakes.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Lando Lakes. Butter. And that is, yes, in little Minnesota, like a little, I don't know. I don't even know where it's at. Suburb of Minneapolis, I'm guessing, based on some of the information that I had found. So we're going to be talking about Lawrence Scott Dame. So he goes by Larry. The name might be familiar to those who live in Minnesota because it's kind of wild, but might not. Either way, like I said, not a lot of information on this case. And it's kind of crazy because you would think you would be able to find more. There would at least be some sort of like documentary on this. Nothing. So, and I talk really fast, so I'll try to like not talk as fast just so it's not done in 5 minutes. So, okay. So Larry Lawrence, we'll just call him Larry. So he was born in 1972 and his problems seemed to kind of start pretty early on. He was just kind of like, I don't want to say a troublemaker, but he just got in a lot of trouble growing up. There was 5 siblings in his family. I don't even have a lot of information on any of his family, other than one sister, which we will talk about. But he got expelled from Catholic high school. His father said that he would get letters daily, basically saying that Larry had been skipping school. And his dad knew that he was hanging out with friends when he was skipping, but like he never talked about these friends and he never brought these friends home. I don't really know the family dynamic there, but I don't think it was like necessarily a super close one, family. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
also, I've just got to say, as someone who was raised Catholic and in the Catholic Church, no offense to anyone who's still in it, like I don't blame him for skipping Catholic church, like Catholic school. That is all, especially, 70s, 80s. I'm sure there's still very much fire and brimstones and...
Yeah. And I mean, I think he just kind of was interested in, I mean, there was some mental illness going on there too. We'll talk about a little later. So, he would skip often. He ended up actually just getting expelled, which I'm sure after you miss so many days, that's kind of the next step. So, he also was kind of dealing, he just had an alcohol abuse program. So program, oh my God, let's just cut right here and we'll just start that all over again. So Larry was also developing an alcohol problem, kind of dealing with that at a young age, and it just kind of takes over long term. So by 1991, Larry and another man, I'm guessing just a friend, they lived in some apartments there. They actually took a .22 caliber rifle out into the apartment yard area, and they were just randomly firing shots. Probably drunk, because a lot of this leads up to that point. He was only 18 at this time. So he ended up actually striking like a parked van. Thankfully, nobody got hurt, but obviously they get in trouble for this. So he pleads guilty to a felony property damage charge and he's sentenced to 2 months. That's it. 2 months. Okay. So they also told him, after this time that he was out, you know, he was supposed to be getting treatment for his drug and alcohol problem. So shocking, but Larry doesn't get treatment and he actually doesn't pay his fine either that he owed. So just not looking
and
great.
And no one came after
here.
Him for this?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. Like I said, very much like lack of information.
Okay.
And so I'm not... The couple of things I found were pretty, I mean, they were the same from what I did find. And I just said that he didn't follow up on these things, which I don't know, in the 90s, I guess. I mean, I still feel like by then they should have been, I don't know, more things in place, but whatever.
I mean, wouldn't he have had like a parole officer or something?
Right. Well, I think he did, because then it talks about him getting arrested and returned to jail for several weeks again in 93 and 94, probably from breaking his like
probation
or whatever, I guess, if he had served time. So I'm not really sure. That's kind of gray area there.
Okay.
Basically, we're just kind of laying out the pattern, showing his history of just...
He's always had a troubled history.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So by, let's see, 1995 now, he's actually in prison serving a 4-year sentence. He was charged with first degree assault after he had gotten in a fight with a man and he slashed his throat during an altercation. Oh, dear
God.
So clearly the man lived, I guess, or it would have been a different charge.
Yeah.
Yeah. But oh my gosh. Like, why are we? Wow.
4 years doesn't seem like enough.
I know.
For a person who tried to kill a man.
Kill someone. Like,
why is that just assault? Why wasn't that attempted murder?
I don't know. That's also what I was confused about too. And especially too, when you look at this guy's history, like he's reckless. He's, I don't know. So, and that was just like such a tiny part of like all the information I found that I was like, isn't that kind of a bigger deal? Like, I'm sure it's a bigger deal to the guy whose throat got slashed.
No shit.
Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. Like, dude, this guy has a lot of issues in a very short amount of time. Why is he not locked up longer than that? A lot of this is going to show us just how the system has failed again and again.
Yeah.
So, in February of 2000, so he was released from prison now after serving that 4-year sentence for the first degree assault. So he moves back in with his parents who live in Lino Lakes. Lino feels right.
Yeah, okay. We'll say Lino.
Yeah. So his father said that Larry didn't really talk to them much at all, really. I don't really think there really was a relationship to begin with. But Larry actually had gotten kind of close with his brother-in-law, Todd. So Todd was married to his sister, Donna. So that was kind of the connection there. I guess, so Todd was just like super giving person, like really wanted to help Larry with anything that he could, try to kind of, you know, get him back up on his feet, stay out of trouble, all the things. So he was really the only person that he kind of communicated with. It sounds like the family kind of was just like, yeah, like you can stay here, but we don't really want to have anything to do with you.
I feel like even if they're a sibling, like if my sister was arrested for slashing someone's throat, I'd probably be like, hey.
Yeah, especially a violent crime, nonetheless.
We're gonna cut ties now.
Yeah. So, I mean, the fact that his parents let him live there is kind of like a big thing anyway. Like, okay. So Larry kind of, you know, gets back up on his feet. He starts working for Cisco, Minnesota in Moundsview. So apparently this was like, he worked overnights and he would load trucks. Okay. So it was a job that worked for him. He was able to save up enough money that he eventually moved out, and got his own apartment. So things seem to be kind of going better there. However, not too long after he's in his own place, the alcohol problem picks back up, you know, because now he has money to spend on alcohol and he's on his own. He doesn't have, and I think he's still close with Todd, but like now that he's on his own, Todd thinks like you're a grown ass adult. Like, let's be honest. So he actually ends up getting fired then by September of 2000, the year 2000. Because of the drinking and, you know, not showing up to work, all the things. He didn't tell his family right away, though, that he had been fired. He told them that he was just on a leave because he was actually getting help for the voices in his head.
Oh.
So, So none of that was true, though. I mean, they eventually, you know, find out about that. Like, that's not true. He's just making that up. They know he got fired, but they also know the voices in his head. They're kind of like, okay, is that a thing? Like, they aren't sure. Police even responded to a suicide call at his apartment at one point in time. So they know that he's struggling a little bit, you know, there with mental health. So his youngest brother, his name is Walter. He said that at this point in time, Larry was drinking up to 2 liters of vodka a day.
Oh, God.
And so, yeah. I mean, and he was clearly a functioning alcoholic if you can drink that much and still function.
But are you functioning at that point if you got fired from your job? I feel like functioning alcoholic means that you're still able to maintain those types of things.
I guess, I don't really know what he's doing in his free time at this point. But, yeah, he's drinking a ton. So he tells Walter that, you know, the reason that he drinks that much is because it helps eliminate voices and spirits that he hears in his head. Okay, cool, man. So that's still kind of red flag, right? Like, I don't know. I find that as like alarming. So, so Todd, who we've talked about before, his brother-in-law and his sister, they often had Larry come over to their house because they live there in town too, you know, and they would try to help him out. But they had a lot going on their own anyway. So their youngest son, he was only 22 months old, and he had surgery for a heart defect like when he was born. So he was still recovering from that. That's a huge thing, as we know. And so they were dealing with that, and they were also dealing with their daughter that had spina bifida. That's a, like, that was a mouthful. So, you know, she had to have surgery in order to even be able to walk too. So yeah, they're taking care of two kids that are having some major physical issues, and they had two other kids as well. And so, or wait, no, they only had three kids. I apologize. Three, okay. But they had another son too. So they just had a lot going on, but they were willing to help him out anytime that they could. So, it was more of a concern for him because they knew he was mentioning these voices in his head, but the concern quickly turns to fear of him. Because he becomes a little, I mean, clearly he has this violent history, and he's just, yeah, he's just a little bit scary. You know, some of this just scary dude. So
yeah, especially if, I mean, if we are really hearing voices, like,
right. And you have children, like, okay, yeah, at a certain point you can help, but like, you have to want to help yourself too, you know?
And like, you have to protect your children.
Yeah. 100%. And they have enough on their plates as it is. So the fact that they're even like trying to be there for him and stuff, like, shows what kind of people they are. So about a month later, so this is in October now of 2000, Larry's 28 at this time. He actually gets arrested for taking Donna's car. They didn't say it was like, you know, Grand Theft Auto, anything like that. That's all it really said. They said that he was arrested for this, but that he was released on October 17th. So clearly there wasn't that long. I mean, he didn't serve that much time. So
she,
I don't know if he
didn't actually press charges. Yeah, I bet she didn't press charges.
Yeah, so not really sure what the deal was there. So he gets released, and Todd, who's 32, also just kind of, so we have an idea of how old these people are. So Todd picks him up from jail, and he takes him to Mercy Hospital for a mental health evaluation. So this was per the judge's orders, because clearly there's, things are getting weird. I'm glad that they followed up on that. Todd's friends and coworkers tried to convince him not to pick up his brother-in-law. You know, they're like, dude, he's trouble. Maybe just, he needs to get his life together, figure it out on his own. But Todd, being the good guy that he was and knew, he was like, well, if I don't pick him up, nobody else will. So he goes to pick him up, takes him to do, you know, get his mental health evaluation. Several hours later, they release him. And so he has nowhere else to go. So Todd brings him back to their house. So, and I don't even know if I gave the last name. His name is Mimbach, was the last name of Todd and Donna, I guess.
Okay. I don't know. Like, I feel like Todd and Donna are going to be victims, and I don't want to victim blame, but it's like, why? You have children at home, and like,
yeah,
you're bringing,
it's
some
a lot. It's scary. And even if it is family, like, you still, like, there's a fine line there where, yeah, once again, you have to protect yourself, and you can still want to help them. But there was, I don't understand why they, the hospital even released him, to be honest, but that's a whole nother thing. So, he comes back to the Mimbach home, and this is where his sister, so Donna's 29, and Todd, he lives there too, and then their children. So John was 12, Amber was 9, and Daniel's 22 months old. So he's there that evening, and Donna, though, is not, like, thrilled about this. So there's actually a 911 call where they had it all typed up what the conversation was. So she calls the police, and she's asking them to help her find a place for Larry to stay. So the call, like, it's kind of a little bit all over the place, but she says, this is, or it's regarding my brother. Like, okay, my brother got discharged from jail today. And the consequence was that he was supposed to go to the hospital because he hears voices and he stole my car and all this stuff. My husband brought him to the hospital and they will not take him. So my husband is bringing him back here because we can't get a hold of his parole officer. Well, I can't have him stay here. He has to go back to jail or something. And she said then that because he was turned away, or the reason they turned him away was because he wasn't making any suicidal threats, or in general making threats to anybody. So that's why the hospital said they could not keep him. So That's what she tells the police. The police straight up just say there's really nothing they can do. Okay. So Larry's mom also had been reaching out saying that something was wrong with him and really they needed someone to help him.
Yeah.
Okay. So just remember that. So super effed up because early the next morning, Larry kills Donna, her husband Todd, and their three children as they are all asleep in their beds.
Oh.
He used a hammer on each of them. Yes. As well as a knife, except for he did not use a knife on his sister. There was no signs of them fighting back at all. So like the hope is just, it was when they were asleep and it happened fast enough that they didn't even know. So
I was going to say, I would hope, because I would think, not to get morbid or gross, but he would have had to have hit them hard with that first initial hit to like
for them to not
knock them
back
unconscious or something and not wake up screaming.
Right.
Because I know once as a child, I was sleeping on Nana and Papa's couch waiting for my parents to come home. And I slept through them coming home. They came up and woke me up because they'd heard me fall off the couch and I hit my head on the corner of the coffee table.
Mm-hmm.
And I had blood gushing, which I mean, mind you, face and head always bleed more, right, but I actually still have a scar by my eyebrow. Uh-huh. And so like, they think that like, I didn't wake up because it like kind of knocked me unconscious again a little bit. Like,
And kids like sleep really hard.
I mean,
not that adults don't either, but like,
Right. So I mean, I would say if there's nothing, and it's, if they were all still in their beds or something and no one got up, it's like, well, it's like the Villisca house,
what I was thinking. Yes.
It was like, you would have had to have hit them all hard enough right away for no one to wake up and alert the others.
Correct. That's what I thought. And like, I don't know what, how big Todd was. I don't know how big, I think I did read somewhere that Larry, his like description, and I don't think he was like a super big guy by any means. I mean, I've seen a picture of him, but it's just his mugshot. So like,
yeah,
I don't know.
But if he, I mean, you don't have to be that big to like, you hit the person in the right spot in the head.
Yeah. I know. And it was just like, So a man obviously that matches Larry's description is seen leaving the Mimbach house that morning around like 6:30. So when Todd doesn't show up for work, and he works at, I didn't put the name of the place, but he's like, does some computer software thing, like super smart dude. But he doesn't show up. And so, you know, a concerned coworker and friend calls the house. Nobody answers. They paged him. That's where I was like, oh, a pager? Yeah. I guess 2000. That's fair.
Yeah.
So they page him and he doesn't respond. So eventually, well, they do think about Larry because they're like, they told him not to, you know, have Larry come get him or go get Larry, whatnot. So they're like, well, maybe Larry like took them somewhere, but they said they never even thought that Larry would actually like hurt any of them.
Yeah.
But they knew he would, I mean, he would take them maybe just when he's, you know, in one of his manic states. So he, they call the police and the police obviously go there and they find the massacre and they say, you know, one of the worst things they've ever seen, especially because children were involved.
Right.
So they know that they're looking for Larry. There was a manhunt of at least like 30 different police officers looking for him. So his younger brother, Walter, they talked to him and he says that Larry had stated that the voices in his head said that his family was out to kill him and that they were trying to put him into a mental hospital and that he thought he should kill his family before they killed him. I don't know why that was never brought up prior to any of this happening, unless they brushed it off like, oh, it's okay, he's going to go get an evaluation. Like, it's fine. Because
but then, like,
this was
when
all
the hospital was like, hey, we're not going to keep him, they'd be like, well, hey, he said this.
Yeah, exactly. Like, maybe share that information. And it was interesting because there was like, I mean, parts of the articles I was reading, they were saying how like the police were like, we did everything we could. I'm like, no, you didn't. Like, I mean, I guess at a certain extent, if you like, I read where it said that if she, Donna would have like actually kicked him out of her house, evacuated him or whatever, they said, then they could have been like, okay, now he can't be here and he's trying to come in. But she didn't because it's her brother. And I think deep down, she still just didn't want him to have
in
nothing.
Trouble.
I mean, because she was trying to like, she even said like, he has to go back to jail or something. Like she was not having it. But so eventually they do arrest Larry in Coon Rapids, Illinois, after a man recognized him at a video store from the news reports. So this guy calls the police and then they arrest him nearby. So Larry confesses to all of it, like just no emotion, never gives a motive. They said he was super lucid and just very calm about the whole thing. he did not act remorseful at all. And he told investigators that he had hit the victims in the head numerous times with a hammer and then decided to cut them with a knife. He cleaned up in the laundry room sink. He wiped off the blood with the towel. He bagged up the bloody towel, his clothing, and the hammer and the knife. He put them all in the bag. And he said he put it in Todd's car. And then he took Todd's car to Rockford, Illinois, where he got rid of the bag by dumping it in a trash bin by a motel. He drove back to Minnesota after he spent one night there, and they were able to recover the bag that he did hide. So they found all the evidence and they take him back. So like, there's no doubt that he already has confessed to this. So Larry pleads not guilty, but because of mental illness. So because of this, they were able to proceed to a split trial. So I wasn't sure what that was all about. So what I found was it said that because he had already confessed to the crime itself, that there was the guilt phase of the trial where the judge convicted Larry of 5 counts of first degree murder. And then there was a second phase of the trial that was considered the mental illness phase.
Okay.
And this, I don't know if this was some, I mean, I guess back in 2000, like you didn't hear a lot about mental illness stuff still as far as being used as a defense, but
right.
The jury, there was a jury for that portion. And they, I think the way I understand it was they, the first half of the trial, the judge is like, yeah, we know you're guilty. Okay. So now we proceed. And now they're trying to prove if this is because of his mental illness that he did this or not.
Or if he was actually sane and knew yeah. what he was doing. Okay.
Yeah. So during that phase, the jury convicted him of the 5 counts of first degree murder and they rejected his mental illness defense.
Okay.
So, okay. That's fair. I mean, I don't know. It doesn't sound like there was a whole lot documented as far as what he had said and done. So it's kind of hard to use that as a defense when you don't have it paper trail. But
right.
So the conviction was upheld, even on appeal, to the Minnesota Supreme Court. And they sentenced him to 5 consecutive life sentences. So he is not eligible for parole, which good, because that's terrifying. And he's actually serving his sentence at the Minnesota Correctional Facility in Stillwater. So with the case being that big and 5 people being murdered, wouldn't you think there would be a lot more information on that?
Yeah, you would, especially, I don't know, like with the whole mental illness aspect of it all and stuff. And
I'm surprised there weren't some kind of laws put in place because of this case of like, you know what I mean? Guess, like, I don't know. And it's crazy because when I first found this case, it was like an article about like the most gruesome, craziest killings in each state or whatever.
Yeah.
And this one popped up for Minnesota. And I was like, what? 5 people were killed in, you know, his own family. So I started going down that trail and I could not find like really any information even on the victims, which I think is so sad because there are children involved, you know, which I know a lot of it is just the time the internet wasn't
as really, you know, it's not like news articles were going up online a ton and stuff like that. So, I mean, I get that, I guess, but that is, I don't know. That's one where I feel like even if he had been found insane during those acts, like he's proven that he's not going to put forth the effort to get the help he needs. So like he still should have served life in prison. Like this isn't an aspect where I was like, oh, if he had been helped, like maybe, cause there was a case, I can't remember where it was. I just remember I think it took place in the '80s where there was a family. The son did need mental help. They knew it. Mm-hmm. There was a night he was living at home with his mom, his dad, and I think his younger brother. And his sister lived somewhere else with her husband. And like, he had actually like been staying with her for a while too, and like poisoned her and she got sick and they figured that out. And so then like, he's back home. He had had some stints in, like, he had a therapist and everything. And there's one night where, like, the dad calls, like, hey, something's going on. And his therapist is like, take him to the hospital, which was only a mile away. They're like, go take him to the hospital. And his dad refused. And he ended up killing the family. He called another sister who didn't live there, and she came, and he killed her and her husband too.
Oh my gosh.
And it was the sister who had been poisoned who didn't come, who was like the only survivor and stuff. And so, but the thing is like, in that aspect, I think you have a well-documented case of someone who was clearly mentally unwell. And in this instance, you had someone just not taking it seriously. His father, like, I don't want to drive the mile to the hospital. We'll deal with it tomorrow. Like,
that's
no. So,
yeah,
that would be an instance of me being like, okay, maybe we go into a mental hospital. Maybe they can be rehabilitated. Like, that's one where I'm like, I don't know how culpable you really are, because it is well documented that you have the psychosis.
Yes, absolutely.
And you're hearing voices and things like that. But like with this guy, one, it's not well documented. Also, it didn't seem like he was trying, you know, even if he wasn't putting forth the effort to help himself.
Correct. And that's where it's really sad too. And I saw on there where they were trying to get the police for like misconduct, and they, you know, concluded that there was no misconduct, which also is unfortunate, because I mean, I feel like the hospital is kind of where that went.
Yeah.
Wrong to begin
and I
with.
Will say too, like, I know there's a lot of like red tape. Like, you know, I did see one of our recent reviews. Someone's like, I wish they wouldn't get political. I'm sorry, life is political to an extent, sharing our beliefs, but like, I'm not the biggest fan of cops. Like, we've seen how problematic that is in this day and age. That's not political. That's just fact. But I think in this instance, it's a lot more to do with our justice system and really what can be done. It's like people who have stalkers or abusers, and there's like, what, you have a piece of paper that says they can't come near you. And we've seen time and time again how this doesn't work, and there needs to be harsher penalties for this. But it's this messed up case of just being like, our justice system doesn't have these things in place. And you know, there is the extent of, if she had been like, hey, I feel really unsafe, I don't want him in my home, maybe they could have done something. And, you know, it's just the wording of it all, which really sucks too.
And that's the thing, like, not all cops are bad. And I, you know, like, there's bad in every field of life. I mean, it doesn't matter where you're at. But like, I think in this case too, they can't just go against their everything.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like, that's their job on the line too. And so I think they're following, and they were right on the fact that there was no threat. He wasn't making any threats to them. I think she was, I don't know. He should have been taken back to the facility or something.
Yes. And I don't know. Yeah. Like, I don't know. I feel like if part of the stipulation for him getting out was that he had to be evaluated, I feel like there should be an automatic, at least 24-hour hold in a situation like that, despite whatever you might like, okay, they're not threatening
even
anyone.
Even if he's
like,
not suicidal, like, there's still some stuff going on there that he's probably not safe to be out in the public right now.
If a judge ordered, I just feel like if someone in the justice system was like, hey, a stipulation of you getting out is you have to go get evaluated, this should just come up with an automatic hold.
I agree. And like, I mean, they should probably just go in and, I mean, if that's the part of the order, the court order too, take him in there. He has to stay so long, because of course, if he wants to be out, he's been in prison for, you know, however long, but in the past, now he's back. Like, of course he's going to be like, yeah, I'm fine. Everything's great. I'm not suicidal. Please let me back out. I don't want to be locked up.
I don't mean harm to anyone. Because the thing is too, is I also feel like, and this was what also, and it's not to say that people who are mentally unwell and stuff and could be a harm to others don't understand, but this is also what kind of just leads me to think that, like, maybe there's not really these voices, or they're not as bad. Like, he's still like, maybe he does have voices, but he still knows right from wrong, because he knew not to say anything. And I feel, I don't know, like, if you truly felt that your family was trying to kill you and you believed this deeply, wouldn't you be telling people in a position like of you're, power or in this situation. Like, I fear for my own safety. Yes.
Well, and don't the fact send that he back took the steps to cover up the crime after the fact, exactly. too, as far as, like, there's some stuff off with that, too. And so, I mean, yes. I'm glad that he's where he's at. He cannot hurt anyone else. But, like, the fact that there was no remorse there and, like, it's really sad knowing that there was that kind of friendship and relationship between him and his brother-in-law, Todd, and, like, you know, it turned out the way that it did. And I can't believe there's not more on that. And why kill the kids? Like, I'm sorry, what is... I never understand
that stuff. I know.
In this case, like, I kept thinking, like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have so much information. I don't know if I'm even going to have time to research all of this because it's in depth. And then when I found, like, the same few things over and over, I was like, what? That's why I was like, maybe people in Minnesota, I'm sure, are well aware of this case because, like, it's insane and it's so sad. And it's always scary when it's family killing family and stuff like that.
It is. But. It is. Yeah. That's like my case for next week. I've, you know, been researching and stuff already. And I knew of the case before going in. I feel like it's a more well-known case. I won't go into it now, but I thought I was going to find so many shows and documentaries about it. I went to go watch the one show I could find about it. Saw it was on Amazon Prime. Mm-hmm. No, it's currently unavailable. Can't find it anywhere else. Tried to find it on YouTube, found it, but it was like spotty and I felt like they cut parts, so I just didn't even. So I was like, you know what? We're just going to read all the articles and we'll go that route. I know there are other podcasts on it that I could probably listen to and stuff, but I'm like, I'm going to see what I can get. But I'm like, how? Because it's kind of the same boat. And I'm sure I'll mention it again next week. But I'm like, with as massive as this case is, I can't believe there isn't. There is a movie. Mm-hmm. That was based on it, but I'm not going to watch that because it's not a documentary. Right. A movie made it, so you know they're going to dramatize things and stuff. And
I know. That's what sucks is, like, you get so used to having technology and information at your fingertips in a second. And so then when you find these older cases, you know, I still think, like, well, why isn't there more information, you know? And it's like, oh, well, and then I found a couple podcasts on this case and I was like, well, I could listen to those. But then I was looking in their show notes too. And, like, they had put their sources in there and I'm like, those are literally the same sources I just read. So, like, I'm not going to listen to you say the same things that I'm going to share as well. Like, I'm sure maybe there was some extra things that I didn't catch, but, like, that's the gist of the story, is the system in general. And just how sad it is and how we don't even have that much information on the family, but the fact that the family did try to help him.
And
I mean, it just started early on, you know, it escalated. It did. So
speaking of podcasts though, with that, it's kind of funny, not funny, haha. But so I have a client who we listen to podcasts while he's in, and we happen to be listening to cults, and he brought up the name. It was the Angel's Landing cult that I did from Kansas recently. And at first, like, they used his actual name. So at first it threw me up. I'm like, why do I know this name? And I was like, I know this. We covered this. And I was talking to him, but, like, some of the information they had, I'm like, they had to have paid for some sources or something. Cause I'm like, I have no idea where they would have found this information. Yeah. And then some of the information they gave, I was like, where did you get that from? Cause that's not in the timeline of everything else I've seen.
And that's the thing. Like, we take our information from what's publicly available because can't trust some of that other stuff. So,
right. Well, and also too, like, listen, Colts is on that Parcast network. They have whole teams of people. Like, the two hosts don't even, like, they talk about how they do all this research, but if you listen at the end, they go on who did the research, who wrote out the show and all this. It's like they're just the voices of it, which always is funny because he's always like, Vanessa isn't a licensed psychologist, but she has done a lot of research. I'm like, no, she hasn't. She hasn't done any research. She's reading off the script. Correct. Someone else did research and wrote it for her. But we don't have that, you guys.
Yeah. So, like, we literally do our own research. And
we do our own research. And if we misspeak, we want someone to tell us in a constructive and polite way. Not like, you guys are so wrong on this. You know, like, we're human. We're doing the best.
For the most part. I mean, people haven't been rude.
No. We're doing the best we can.
Yeah. And that's the thing, too. It's like, we've had people that are like, well, please share this story. And it's all, we can tell it's, you know, their opinion on it, and that's fine. But, like, if it's not information that's out there that anyone could find, like, it's just,
we have we a like, hard time I mean, we're sharing
our
that.
Opinions and like, thoughts about what we think happened in cases, but yeah. Like, we also are very clear that that's just our thoughts. So like,
yes,
we're not, we can't unfortunately, you know, share a story that you think, you know, it's all based on just your opinion alone.
Conjecture because, or
yeah,
hearsay. Yeah. Like we don't have the money to hire lawyers for defamation cases and stuff like that. You guys like,
but what's out there is what we are going for. So yes. If you have articles relating to any of the cases we talk about and we haven't mentioned things in there, send them our way. I would love to find more of those because sometimes it is really hard to find information on these cases.
It is.
So
yeah,
we do what we can. And then we fill in the rest with our thoughts and opinions on the matter, which we also make that clear that it's just, that's just our thoughts on that. And I just, you know, that's where we're at. So, that was the case this week. And like I said, if anyone knows more about it that lives there, I'm sure there's a lot more to that story too, that people could probably share of things that went on behind the scenes, as far as maybe he did have more help that we're unaware of and it was never shared.
Yeah. Maybe it was more well documented. Someone else. Yeah.
Yeah. We don't know. But yeah. For those of you who didn't know the story, because that was, you know, 23 years ago.
God, yeah.
I still think of like the 90s as 10 years ago.
So, I know,
like,
same.
We're not there, but that's.
No.
So it's a pretty old case. Yep.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it for this week. So that was Minnesota.
Okay.
Minnesota.
Well, did you watch or read anything in this last week?
Not really. I did finish the book, The Silent Patient, which was amazing.
See, I've heard mixed reviews on that one.
I've heard mixed, but mostly people that loved it. I only heard like one person that didn't like it. So I was like, okay. It was really freaking good. The ending, like I could have used some more closure on it, but I mean, it was really, really good. I like that. But that's it. Other than that, we have stuff every night of our lives. And
right. I feel the same. It. Yeah. The kids and I watched Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse again, which we had seen in theaters, but I remember loving it. I remember it being great, but I forgot just how great it was. Like,
yeah,
I loved it. Like, it's so good. The animation, like the acting, like everything about it is just phenomenal. I love it. I am still hunting for scary books. I want to be scared. So I did read Pinata by Leopoldo Gout, which is like a Mexican horror story. Like they go to Mexico, this young girl gets possessed by like this ancient Aztec ghost. And it was very interesting and well written. It didn't scare me.
Yeah.
And then I read A Head Full of Ghosts. 14-year-old girl, is she schizophrenic? Is she possessed? It was a very interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
There was one like body horror moment that I was like, ooh. But again, not scared. I was like, okay. It was interesting. It was well written, but meh.
Yeah.
And then last night I finished an arc of A Haunting on the Hill, which is coming out October 2nd by Elizabeth Hand. And so this is like a queer retelling of The Haunting of Hill House, which Netflix made into a show and stuff, which I actually haven't read that book. I really should. This one, the pacing was a little slow at points, but I did actually enjoy it. And towards the end, like the ending was really good. I felt really unsettled and uneasy. Still not quite the like freak out I was looking for, but I did enjoy it. So like when that comes out, I think it's worth a read. It was interesting, you know, and stuff, but yeah, that's been where I've been at. I had finished some audiobooks and I've like DNF'd a few audiobooks now because I was just like, meh, not into it, but
why waste the time?
Yeah. That's pretty much where I've been at in life right now.
I mean, I watched the newest season of Yellow Jackets and cause I was way behind and I haven't like, it's been out for a minute, but
I still haven't even watched the first season. I bought it on Vudu at one point and now I have access to it on Paramount Plus and I was like, well, all right.
Yeah.
Still,
I only act well, it's cause I had the Paramount Plus, but you to get the Showtime, you have to pay the Paramount extended or whatever. And so
I was looking because I use my mom. I don't know how we have it because I looked at my mom's and I don't think she has it. I don't know how we have it. I don't know.
Because it was always locked. I know when you said you can watch Showtime when you have it. And I'm like, I can't. My Showtime's always locked. Like it shows it as locked, but I paid it like just prorated like I paid the difference between that for one, you know, to watch it. And now I'm going to cancel it because I'm like, I don't need Showtime right now.
Listen, but, I looked into like the settings for the subscription my mom has for it, and it doesn't look like it's the one with Showtime. I don't know how we're getting Knock on wood. I'm going to take it as long as I can.
Yeah. Seriously.
So now I feel like I have to go in and watch all the Showtime things.
Yeah, you do. Like this one, especially because this show I just freaking love.
I know. I need to get on that. So yeah.
That's it. That's all. So yeah.
That's where we are. So you guys, you know the drill. You can email us, reach out to us on any of our social medias. All the things are going to be linked in the show notes below. Yes. If you can subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen, that helps us a ton. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. And yeah.
So until next time, you stay Heartland kind.
But Darkland wary.